This is the Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL.
Happy Saturday, St. Louis. This is Paul Kurtman here at News Talk STL. And we got a good hour ahead of us here. There's a couple things that I want to talk about in the studio this morning with Joey V.
Glad to be here with you, my friend.
Glad to have you here, Joey.
I'm always here to help out with anything you need. You need a good laugher? I'm here. I'm ready.
I know. You're always good at this.
A pensive thinker? I'm going to place my hand on my chin and scratch it into the mic when you say something really meaningful.
I love that.
Probably the whole show.
I love that.
Yeah.
And if you're not here, I could probably do it too because I've got a little stubble on my chin too.
Let me hear. A little beard scratch. Oh, yeah. ASMR people are going crazy out there.
They're all falling asleep.
Oh, my God. But in a good way. The tingles down their spine.
We'll stop that here in just a second. When they get upset and frustrated with some things that I'm a little upset and frustrated of.
Bring it.
Yeah. So a few things happening. One, Mitt Romney has spoken out about Liz Cheney possibly running for the GOP nomination in 2024. We'll talk a little bit about that. But the first thing that I want to get into is what it is that New York is doing. I don't want to say to combat these immigrants that are being bused to their city and to their state by Governor Abbott in Texas. But that's kind of what they're doing. They're kind of trying to combat that. And they're just – what is happening right now regarding the political situation – on the issue of immigration, this is a masterclass in politics. I mean, if you want to see a skilled tactician, somebody who is a chess master, you need to be paying attention to this whole immigration issue and the battle that's ensuing between these conservative border state governors like Governor Greg Abbott and these liberal, progressive sanctuary city mayors like Mayor Adams in New York or these other mayors like we see in San Francisco or Washington, D.C. So I'm going to get right into that because this is this, Governor Abbott. You know, at first it might have seemed just like a good move. Oh, yeah, well, we'll stick it to you. We'll send these migrants to your city. But it is way more thoughtful and deep than just somebody bantering back and forth and, you know, now it's my turn to get you. Now, most people in the media probably thought, and probably most people in the conservative or Republican ranks probably thought, yeah, get them. We'll show them that, you know, this is going to be their problem. Well, it's more than just that. Governor Abbott has got Mayor Adams. I'm going to use these two as my example, even though this is an issue that reaches beyond just the state of Texas and the city of New York. Okay, we have states like California and Florida, others caught up in this, Washington, D.C., certainly. But what we see happening between Governor Abbott in Texas and Mayor Adams in New York is nothing less than not just political theater, but it is political gamesmanship at its finest. So most people, if you're listening and if you've been listening to this station for any length of time or if you've been paying attention to conservative issues, you know that we have a problem with not just a porous border, but a completely unsecured border, okay? And so this makes no sense. First off, it's constitutional. The federal government is supposed to be in charge of protecting the states from invasion. And it doesn't have to be a military invasion. It can just be an invasion of people that don't have a right to be there, who are forcing their way into the states, okay? So that's an invasion. The Constitution gives the federal government the authority. So this is a contract between the states and the federal government. The states are saying, hey, we'll give you this authority, but we fully expect you to uphold your end of the contract and protect us from an invasion. Well, no surprise here. The government, specifically under the authority, when under the authority of the left, the federal government has absolutely failed to deliver on the terms of the contract. The terms of the contract of the U.S. Constitution, where the federal government is supposed to protect the states from an invasion. And an invasion doesn't have to be millions of people. It can be hundreds of people. It can be dozens of people. It can be one person. We have a video that I had showed Gabe Pfeiffer and Ken Williams the other day when I was in here filling in for Mike Ferguson during Mike Ferguson in the morning. He's been out this week. He'll be out a little bit next week also. And the video shows the Texas National Guard having locked a gate at the border, and then the Border Patrol shows up under the authority of the Biden administration because, you know, of course, it's a federal agency. The Border Patrol serves under the authority of the Biden administration because President Biden's the president right now, and the Border Patrol had orders to go and unlock the gate. You can actually find this video if you go to paulkurtman.com, P-A-U-L-C-U-R-T-M-A-N. Scroll all the way to the bottom. Go to radio number, I think it's radio number 60 or radio number 61. I have a video right there on that page that shows the Border Patrol opening this gate while the National Guard troops just kind of stand by after having locked it. And they just let these people just walk through the border. They're not stopping them. They're not searching their bags. They're not asking for their papers. They're literally opening a gate. On one side is Mexico, and they just let these people who are standing around this gate just start walking right through. So there's a problem with our border. Earlier in the Biden administration, we had a problem with, I think it was Haitian immigrants who are coming up through the southern border. Just thousands and tens of thousands, if not more of them, standing around under bridges looking for shelter, just trying to find their way in and then coming through in just masses. We've had people marching up from Central and South America, literally marching with, you know, their feet on foot, not riding buses, not flying in airplanes, marching. This was an issue back in 2016. It was an issue in 2020. It's been an issue in 2021. They call them the migrant caravans that are making their way up to the border because they know they can get through. And they have gotten through. We have had record amounts of undocumented immigrants coming across the border. And in some cases, like the video I just described to you, the Border Patrol is under orders to open up the gate and let them through, completely undermining the entire purpose of having a Border Patrol institution in the first place. And you have all these virtue signaling mayors in all these progressive cities in New York and in Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, just all across the country, talking about how the borders need to be open. But when you have that type of mouthpiece coming from these mayors in these progressive cities saying the border needs to be open, well, the border states don't appreciate that very much because they're the ones that have to deal with the issue. And it's not just the issue of people coming across the border and, you know, we got to check them and see who they are, but they also in many cases have to jail these people. In many cases, they have to put them in camps, give them hospital care. In many cases, they also have to just kind of warehouse them until they find out exactly who they are. And this is important, okay? So the left will tell you, you know, kids in cages. Barack Obama put more kids in cages and separated them from their parents than Donald Trump ever had. But this is an important thing that you have to do when people come here undocumented. We don't know who they are. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story about when I was serving in the Marine Corps. And why that this story will help you understand why it's important to have a secure border. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was out on a field operation. And this was before I deployed to the Middle East. And the whole purpose of training, the whole purpose of these field operations is to give you combat experience before you actually land in an actual hot landing zone, until you are actually faced with having rounds come down range and you have to make decisions for the first time because you don't have any experience, right? It would be chaotic. So you train to give you some experience. Before I deployed overseas, oh man, this might have been in, it was just after 9/11, but I think this might have been in 2002, the summer of 2002. We were doing a training operation just about a month and a half from having to deployed to the Middle East. We were doing a training operation. And I had my whole Marine Corps squad. This is in the middle of the night. We landed in a landing zone. We ran off the back of the helicopters. I got all my Marines in a big 360-degree position. So they're all landing down kind of in a big circle. And I'm in the middle of the circle. And from there, I'm getting orders from my commanding officer, from my platoon commander. I'm communicating with other squads and platoon as we get ready to step up and begin our movement. But then we got word, hey, we're going to have to stay here all night. The truck's down, or I can't remember what the word was. We couldn't go off on our mission. We had to stay in this 360-degree position. But my Marines were spread out so far. I mean, I had to walk like maybe 150 feet from one Marine to the next Marine. It was an incredibly, if you will, porous border. Anybody could have just walked through because everybody was spread out so far apart. Now, here's the thing. If I would have been hit inside my perimeter, the first thing that I would have had to do would be to tighten up my Marines so that way we could begin to close the gaps because we don't want anybody else coming in. Okay, do you understand what I'm saying? If you get hit inside your perimeter, the first thing you do is secure your perimeter. That's the first thing you do. If I would have been hit inside that perimeter while all these Marines are spread out in a circle, if I would have been hit inside of my perimeter, it would have been dereliction of duty for me to virtue signal and say, hey, everybody, hey, all Marines, I want all the Marines to stand up. We're immediately going to attack. That would have been the wrong thing to do. If you get hit inside your perimeter, the first thing you do is close up your perimeter. It's been, what is it now, 21 years this September. Is it 21 years? My goodness. Since 9/11/2001. We got hit inside our perimeter. And ever since then, for the last two decades, politicians have continued to play politics with our border, saying, well, should we close the gaps or should we not? No. It's really heartless and not compassionate to close up the border. Folks, we got hit inside our perimeter, and thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans were killed. And to this day, politicians in Washington, D.C., and in cities across the country are trying to say that we're the wrong ones, we're in the bad place, we're uncompassionate, we don't have a heart because we want to secure the border. It doesn't mean that you don't let anybody through. It just means that you know who's coming through, and you have to know who's coming through to manage the risk of getting hit inside your perimeter. Now, in a country like America, we could get hit inside of our perimeter again by having another 9/11 attack. We could. There have been bombs that have gone off. There have been people that have been beheaded since in the U.S. since September 11th, 2001. In fact, I'm trying to remember exactly when this was, but I went to a meeting. You all might be familiar with this border group, voluntary border group called the Minutemen. A bunch of ranchers, they patrol the border because they're trying to augment and help the border patrol. So they'll go out. I don't know if they're armed. I don't think they are. I'm not sure. But they will go out and patrol the border. And I remember I went to a meeting with my brother probably back around 2009, 2010. And the word that came to us was that these drug cartels had beheaded. At that point, they had beheaded more people in America than ISIS had beheaded in Iraq. Because these drug cartels are incredibly ruthless, right? They, in fact, I think it was in Brownsville, Texas. I don't remember the year. If you look it up, you'll know the story. They beheaded some people, and then they went into a nightclub in Brownsville, Texas, and literally rolled the heads into the nightclub like bowling balls. That happened in America. So this border issue is incredibly important because we don't want to get hit inside of our perimeter. But what's inside of our perimeter? We're not talking about just terrorist attacks. We're not talking about just beheadings. What about all the different programs that we have here that taxpayers are paying for, that taxpayers have an obligation to continue to reap the benefits of? There is no reason whatsoever why an American citizen should have to stand in line behind somebody who is here illegally. We have an American taxpayer or an American citizen. Let's talk about citizenship. You have an American citizen who needs medical treatment. You have an American citizen who needs food. And then they wind up standing in line behind somebody who's here illegally. Doesn't even rate citizenship. Citizenship in America is supposed to mean something. So this is all the background, right? This is the issue that we're dealing with when it comes to the border. Greg Abbott says, okay, you want a porous border? You want people just to come here undocumented, unvetted? We don't know who they are? Well, it's not going to be a problem for the citizens of Texas. And so he started busing all of them right up to New York. And now the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, he is now in a situation where he is now pitted against the people of New York because in order to take care of these migrants, this is his idea. Let's take all these luxury hotels, and every night there are luxury hotels that aren't with rooms that are not being filled. There is vacancy in these luxury hotels every night throughout the week on the weekends. Let's take all these undocumented immigrants, these illegal aliens, and let's commandeer these private businesses and put these undocumented immigrants in those luxury hotel rooms. The people of New York are a little upset by this. I mean, first off, there are vacant buildings in New York all over the place. There are vacant buildings that the city of New York likely owns because people haven't paid their taxes or whatever, and it just became property of the city or property of the state. There's places that you can do this, but Greg Abbott has put Eric Adams in a place where he says, put your money where your mouth is, put your resources where your mouth is, put your authority where your mouth is. And Eric Adams, he's falling for it. He is commandeering these private businesses, these luxury hotels, to put these undocumented immigrants, these illegal aliens in. And what do you think that's doing in terms of how the people are beginning to feel about Eric Adams? But how do you think it's going to do in terms of the businesses, the hotel owners, the other residents of the hotel who are staying there for one reason or another? How do you think it's going to make the whole business community, the whole tourist industry, how do you think it's going to make them feel about Eric Adams? We have people in New York saying, here's a quote from a Fox News article. I think if they're available, why not let them go vacant when someone needs a room? Jerry from Florida told Fox News outside the Row, New York City, an upscale hotel the city plans to use. Right now, there's a desperate situation for certain people that has to be taken into consideration and maybe given priority until they can be placed in some other facility. But then when interviewing other people, maybe some of the, maybe not so, you know, the people who have a little bit more sense. Here's one guy named Frank. Frank tells Fox News, the easiest fix would be to strengthen and protect the border. They're coming here because of the border. He said he's upset that people in other states, particularly Texas, are laughing at New York as the city's leaders give away everything that the taxpayers built. What we're seeing happen between Greg Abbott and Eric Adams, now it's true. This is a chess game. This is a strategy game. They're strategizing to see who can come out on top and win this argument and this debate on this particular policy. What is incredibly sad is that the people, these migrants, these immigrants that have crossed the border illegally, they're the pawns on the chessboard. But you know what? It's not Greg Abbott's fault. Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, the mayor of Washington, D.C., the mayor of San Francisco, the mayor of you name it, they're the ones that made the first move on this chessboard when they decided that they were going to move the pawns on this chessboard, in this case being these people that have crossed the border illegally. And they put Greg Adams, they put Ron DeSantis, they put these other border states and these mayors of these towns and the governors of these border states in a position where they had to respond. And right now, the people of New York seem to be turning against Eric Adams on this issue. Why? Because he's not doing anything to stop the situation. He's not doing anything to fix it. He's, in fact, making it worse for the people of New York because he's commandeering their private property, and not just any private property, the private property that brings the most money and tax revenue into the city of New York. He's commandeering it and beginning to put these illegal aliens in those luxury hotels. So it is a masterclass in chess. I think we're going to go to a break here, Joey?
Yeah, we got a guest who wants to come and hang out with us.
All right, let's do that. I'm going to have my friend Travis Fitzwater. Travis recently won the GOP nomination to the state Senate. He's a good friend of mine. He is one of the best people that we can have in Jefferson City. Always willing to have a conversation, always willing to talk about the issues. He's going to be joining us right after the break. My good friend, state representative, soon to be state senator-elect, Travis Fitzwater. This is Paul Kirtman on the Paul Kirtman Show, News Talk STL. Make sure you stick around and make sure you listen to Travis Fitzwater. You're going to want to hear what he has to say. And this is a guy that you're going to be wanting to follow for the next several years as he does the people's work in Jefferson City. We'll be right back in just a couple minutes.
Follow Paul on social media at Paul Kurtman. This is the Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL.
All right, welcome back to the Paul Kurtman Show here at News Talk STL. I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into this one. We have our next guest with us this morning. He is a good friend of mine. It was an honor and a privilege to serve with him when I was a member of the Missouri General Assembly, and he is on to bigger and better things. He is practically the state senator-elect for the good people of Travis. What district is that again?
Senate District 10.
Senate District 10. Travis Fitzwater is joining us. Travis, yeah, what's that?
State Senate District.
State Senate District. That's all right. District number 10. Travis, thanks so much for joining us. I want to talk to you just a little bit about the campaign that you just came through. I want to talk to you a little bit about what you see getting ready to happen in the future. But right now, I got a headline up on my computer saying that Governor Parson is looking to give details on Monday about the timing of an upcoming special legislative session. I'm wondering if you can just fill us in a little bit about that. I know he wants to propose some tax cuts. Do you guys have any details on that right now, or is everybody just still kind of waiting to see what type of tax cuts it is he's talking about?
Yeah, I think at a minimum he wants to basically reduce the taxes down faster, just kind of in one swath what we've already passed. So, you know, we've reduced income taxes down to 4.8 in statute, but it goes on a yearly 0.1% decrease. So he just wants to reduce it down to what we have already passed in the legislative body. And Paul, you may have been there when we passed that final version, Elijah Haar's bill a couple years ago. But I think we have a lot of room to go further. And so it'll be really interesting to see what his details are. When I've talked to him, it's kind of been a push to continue to push those income taxes down. The income tax cuts have worked. That's why we have record revenues. People are investing in Missouri. It's great. It's great. And, you know, the last month, our revenues for the last month are up like 39% from last year, last year at the same time. And last year's complete revenue picture was up 20%. So we're way over taxing. We need to give Missourians relief.
Yeah, but I'm really glad you just read those numbers off on air, because people need to know that when you make it less expensive for people to earn money in a state, then more people are going to want to come in and do business in that state and ultimately wind up generating more revenue for the state. It's an incredible lesson for people to learn. So if I just heard you right, we currently have a tax cut bill that was passed several years ago. And of course, I know about this because you're right. I was there when we debated and voted on these bills. But that was kind of a bill that would require over time for that tax cut to basically be worked into the tax code. And it sounds like Governor Parson's just saying, hey, why wait? Let's get this done today.
That's basically it. And I'm all for it. I just think that if we keep hitting record revenues after we pass that cut, because we have all this money in our state coffers that can cover that cut, because we're growing as a state on general revenue, then we ought to keep ticking it down, you know, put triggers in place where we're being smart about it. We're not turning it into Kansas overnight, where they had the problems where they basically took out their income taxes and they had all these revenue issues, especially going into a recession. But put triggers on. If we're hitting record revenues, let's keep going down on the income tax and keep giving Missourians their money back. They spend it a lot better, as you and I both agree, than the government ever will.
Yeah, that's true. And what I really appreciate about the General Assembly here in Missouri versus Kansas, I mean, they had their heart in the right place. Good initiative, bad judgment, because they didn't build in kind of that safety net to make sure that this was going to be done in a way that that didn't leave them on the hook for more revenue that they would have desperately needed. Let me ask you a little bit about this. So now you're running for state Senate. You made it through a very contested primary and came out on top there. You're going to be swearing in after the general election. I don't think you have a Democrat opponent, but after the general election is when you're officially going to be the state senator elect. What is the set of issues that you want to carry into the state Senate as opposed to being a member of the Missouri House? Or are those same issue sets going to be making their way from the Missouri House into the state Senate, where you'll probably be for 4, maybe even 8 years?
Yeah, I think the issues that will be important to, you know, it's fascinating, this election, this primary, there were a lot of, not for the Senate in particular, a lot of very conservative members were elected, won their primaries, like really conservative folks. I think what Missourians want is they want Republicans that are in the General Assembly to act like Republicans and pass conservative legislation. And so I think that's going to be the primary goal. You know, how do we protect life? How do we protect kids? How do we provide opportunities for adoption and foster care now that we've banned abortions effectively in the state of Missouri? How do we decrease the budget? Because the budget's at a record high, like it just jumped $14 billion in the last year because we got all these federal dollars. But how are we smart about that going forward? How do we give more money back to Missourians in the form of tax cuts, things like that? And then also the federal government is really overreaching. So how do we push back against the federal government that's getting more and more involved in all these things, all the things in our lives, whether it's our Second Amendment rights, whether it's energy policy, things like that? How do we push back against the federal government that is getting way too involved with the current administration? I think those will be really crucial pieces. I think education is another big deal. How do we protect kids by giving the right education? How do we fund kids and not systems? And I think that's going to be really important as well. That discussion, especially with the Senate, the way that it now will be structured with these new members who are elected in their primaries, I think there's going to be a big push to really give kids as many options, parents as many options as possible with their kids. And I think that's an important message right now as the pandemic kind of really changed the dynamic in education even more than it already was changing.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. When you're talking about education and you're talking about all these conservatives that won in these contested primaries, and in one case, a conservative beat an incumbent Republican. And yeah. I think if anything should be speaking to the leadership of the House and Senate, it's that the people they're happy that we have Republican supermajorities or Republican majorities. But what we want the Republicans to act like Republicans. And I think one thing that really speaks to that, you've just been talking about education. Our Attorney General, Eric Schmidt, was really going after schools who were forcing these mask mandates on the kids. And we know that that is bad for the development of especially young children. Still learning their language skills and everything else. But then a member of the state Senate, they had voted to strip the attorney general of the funds that he was using to actually protect these kids. And I think that really spoke to the people of our state, and they've just spoke back through this primary election, though we want people to be conservatives there. How does your family, you've been in Jefferson City for several years now, and I, of course, know that it can be a dark world and it can really kind of weigh down on the family, but I know that your wife has really been supportive of you. After coming through a primary that was so difficult and so competitive, I can just imagine how elated probably your wife is and your kids and everybody else and your whole family and parents and everybody. That you came through this. Is everybody kind of taking a big sigh of relief that finally that election's over? Or is it kind of like, okay, now the work begins in Jefferson City for another several years?
Yeah, all that's right. My just turned eight-year-old, it was her birthday last week. She was really funny. By the end of it, I was gone so much, working so hard. She's like, I just kind of want you to lose, because she thought that I'd be home more. If that was the case. But they love it. They've been great. My wife is a saint. She homeschools our children. So education issues for us is very personal. You know, we have kids that are very similar to your kid's age, Paul, as you know, and, that stuff is, we're going to take our kids' education, and we've taken responsibility over that, which a lot of parents want to do. And homeschooling, I think, has doubled since the pandemic. Because parents have seen, you know, in a lot of, especially liberal school districts or liberal areas where schools have shut down, you know, the kids aren't getting the education they need on Zoom calls. Like, you know, you can't get a kid to sit down and watch Zoom all day. So, you know, they're taking their kids' education in their own hands, and it's really revolutionizing how education is working. It's also changing the workforce in a lot of ways, because people are having a hard time. Businesses, any business you talk to, can't find employees. So we've just got a ton of work to do on education, on workforce development, on economic development. There's so many pieces to get done. And I'll tell you, my wife has been just an incredible blessing. She's all in. She wanted me to run more than I did. You know, she's very political. as I know your wife is as well. And they're just great supports for us. And she's been amazing.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Look, Travis, I know you're out on the road and you're doing some traveling today, and so I certainly don't want to keep you, but I want to thank you for joining us. If people want to get a hold of you, or if they want to follow you or be involved in the campaign, where's the best place that people could go to make contact with you?
I'm pretty easy to find online. If you just Google Travis Fitzwater, or I'm most of my profiles on social media are at Travis Fitzwater. So facebook.com/Travis Fitzwater or twitter.com/Travis Fitzwater. Those are the best way. And I've got to say, Paul, I'm so glad you have a radio program. You're like, you're perfect for this. and I'm so excited for you, man.
Thanks, Travis. I hope to have you back on more often. Maybe you can join us in studio sometime.
Would love it.
All right, brother. All right, well, I'll let you go. I'll let you go, man. But thanks again, Travis, for joining us.
Glad to join you all.
All right. That was Travis Fitzwater. Just won his primary out in State Senate District number 10. Very, very contested primary out there. And this is a district that covers, I think, parts of, I mean, if you're in Troy or Moscow Mills, I think maybe even part of St. Charles, but then all the way out to Fulton, Kingdom City, down towards Jefferson City. I mean, just in all that area in between. So this is a very large rural district. And whenever I've gotten to campaign, I tell you what, Joey, I'm glad I never ran for state senate, at least right now, because whenever I've gotten to campaign, it's always been in a state assembly district.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer you get to a big city, the smaller those districts get. I would never have to drive more than 15, 20 minutes to get across my district because there's enough population. But when you're in a state senate district out in like rural Missouri, you might have 4, 5, 6 counties. There's other places where it's like the whole top quarter of the state. You know, I'm just huge, huge districts. It's a lot of miles to be putting on your car just asking people for a vote.
I know. That's why we gave speeches off the back of trains back in the day. Just let them run after you while you just talk.
Somebody should do that today. Mm-hmm. Somebody should totally do that. There's some trains that probably still, I don't know the train. I don't know where the train tracks are, but there's probably still some trains running across, you know, northern Missouri somewhere. That's a pretty good idea.
I know last week you were talking about knocking
probably
on
a safety hazard.
3,000 doors, or you said some crazy number, so
30,000 doors.
Oh, my goodness.
But it wasn't just me. So my friend Jose Silva was in here last week, and we talked a little bit about the campaign. And between he, myself, my wife Ruth, and a young man from our church named Caleb Tweeten, we knocked on about 30,000. They weren't all brand new doors. We probably knocked on about 10,000 unique doors, but in many cases, we would knock on them 2, 3, and 4 times. So by the end of the campaign, we had knocked on 30,000 doors, some of them the same door over and over again as we tried to, you know, reinforce to the voters the idea, like, we're serious about this. We want to earn your vote.
You get paid by the door or something. Like, you go to Menards and just go knock on doors that are hanging up for display, too. Like, all right, that's another 100.
Man, I never even thought of that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have worked for me, but if somebody would have paid me to campaign and said, like, hey, I'll give you a dollar for every door you knock on.
I put a flyer on this one.
Go to a door store.
And then flip it. Flyer on that one. We're good.
On that one. Screen doors.
Exactly.
Doggy doors. Just anything. Man, but yeah, these state senate districts, man, they are huge. And a lot of times people don't understand what goes into campaigning. And I'm just going to say here for a couple minutes, I am so tired. I understand why people do it. But the stakes are so high in our country. There are some people, sometimes you'll see a ballot and it'll be flooded with like 20 or 30 names of people running for the same thing. Because people just want to get their name on the ballot for whatever reason. Sometimes it's like a poetic thing. It's just the principle. Well, listen, get your name on the ballot if you're going to actually be competitive, if you're actually going to work hard to actually win, right? Because the stakes are so high. And when people actually go out to campaign and they're out knocking on doors, like they wake up thinking about it, they go to sleep thinking about it all day long. They're consumed with how can I campaign? Who do I need to talk to? How can I build a coalition? How do I get people activated in their communities? I mean, it just consumes you. And those are the types of people that are really serious about campaigning that you know that if they're also attached to a set of principles that they clearly believe in, well, they're going to take that same fight with them into Jefferson City or into Washington, D.C. But man, I think we had something like 20 people running for U.S. Senate.
Yeah, it must mean something to have your name on there, even if you know you're going to lose. You may get some clout or you may build up your mailing list or something like that. Like, I'll put my name on there and then people will know who I am.
Or just build your ego.
Yeah, exactly. That may work too.
I've met so many people that have introduced themselves. I was a candidate for U.S. Senate in Arkansas. And like
they lead with that.
Like they will injure. I once got an email from somebody who is involved in government, and it was so funny to me. I never was dogging him for this or anything, but it was just funny to me. It was the first time I met him. This might have been 15 years ago, and he signed an email. He signed his name, and then under there he put his academic credentials. He put Harvard, and then under that he put child actor. Like, actually listed that, and it just tickled me. Like,
that means you stopped being an adult actor. Like, at some point you were fired or quit from acting, and the whole Hollywood just said, get rid of him. So, like, all right, just child actor.
But that was it. That was part of him building his resume to me. He wanted me to know that he was a child actor, and he put that right up there with Harvard. So, you know, sometimes people put their name on a ballot just because they want to have, they want to stroke their own ego. They want to be able to introduce themselves. Being a candidate for U.S. Senate is not the same thing as being the nominee for U.S. Senate. And it's not the same thing as being elected to the U.S. Senate, because it takes like $5 or $50. Did you know that?
That just means you did some paperwork, right?
It means you had $50 to burn. And so you went down to Jefferson City, you got your name on the ballot, you paid your $50, you showed them that you've paid all your taxes, you know, next thing you know, you're a candidate for U.S. Senate. But there's a difference between people that are doing it for poetic reasons or doing it because to them it is their vehicle to get on a stage because they like to give speeches. And I've given lots of speeches, right? But it's not about it, for me, it's not about the speeches, never has been. Like, there's some things that you want to be involved in, you want to move the needle. But for some people, they want to be a candidate, so they get the invitation to go out to a committee meeting or the invitation to go to a dinner so that way they can introduce themselves and speak. Some people are really addicted to just that kind of attention. They don't raise any money. They just want to be the one to go out and give speeches. Or in some cases, they just want to have their name on the ballot so that way they can tell people. It makes them feel good. They can introduce themselves as a candidate. And like this is so incredibly prevalent across the country. And I think that I think there's a problem when voters let people get away with that. We should not let people get away with that. Like, listen, you are either consumed with the desire and you are desperately clawing for the resources to wage an actual competitive campaign, or else we don't need to spend our time on you. We want to find somebody who's actually going to fight the fight in the campaign with a set of principles that they're campaigning on, because we want that person to take that same type of hunger and passion and desire to win into Washington, D.C. to also win on the issues. Am I just old-fashioned and a prude for that, or?
No, I think you even said something people always forget about, is that if someone's knocking on your door, give them that time to grill them. You know, ask them the questions that you want them to answer. Don't just, you know, keep the door shut and hide through the window. Like, what are you standing for? Is it anything? Why are you wasting everyone's time?
And I'll tell you, most people, whenever you ask them that question, like why you're running for office, a lot of people, they won't give you a good answer because they don't know, because it's all about them. It's about their ego. I remember Ted Kennedy was asked why he was running for office, like back in the early 80s, I think. I'm trying to remember exactly when this was. Ted Kennedy, a U.S. senator, was running for United States president. And he was asked by the interviewer, why are you running for president? And he didn't have an answer.
I didn't predict that question. Oh, man, right out the gate with the hard ones.
Yeah. I mean, here you are. You're announcing your candidacy for U.S. president. Someone says, why? And he didn't have an answer. You can find the video on YouTube. He just kind of stammered and stuttered and kind of tried talking his way out of answering the question. And like, that was the beginning of the end of his race for president. Before it was even started, it was basically over, because everybody understood it is not about the issues with this guy. It's not about leadership. I mean, even somebody who could just think on their feet should have come up with something a little bit better, but he just demonstrated to everybody that he doesn't really want to run for president for any real reason other than he just wants to run for president.
But just tap his little name tag. Like, you saw the name, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of peer pressure back at home.
I ran into, you know, Elliot Davis?
Yeah.
From you paid for it?
Mm-hmm. Big newsman, yeah.
Oh, man.
Well-known in St. Louis.
I used to see him in the Capitol building from time to time. And I remember watching him do the whole You Paid For It segment whenever I was in high school. I remember one time he did one of these segments on this little pin that legislators wear. Member, state, House of State Representatives. And they wear those pins so that way the ushers of the chamber let the right people onto the House floor, you know?
Okay.
It's kind of like an ID badge, except it's a pin. And but they kind of cost a little bit of money, and so he did one of these things. But one thing that I learned is there's a lot of people getting elected to the Missouri House of Representatives has far more to do with being able to go home back to your community and say, look, you know, I have the pin, member, House of Representatives. Where do you want me to stand for this picture as we cut the ribbon on this new business? You know, that's what it's about. That's what it's about for them. I got so disgusted with it, I actually went like a year. After the ushers got to know me, I probably went 2 years without even wearing the pin. I was just like, why? You know, like members of the Missouri General Assembly can also get license plates that say rep or senator.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I'm not beating people up who do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, if you have a license plate that says rep or senator and you get pulled over by the highway patrol, there is a 95% chance that you actually don't wind up getting a ticket. But I don't want to put the highway patrol in a bad light, any law enforcement, right? Because the General Assembly cuts the budget that often trickles down to the highway patrol or to counties or wherever else, you know. So a lot of times they won't do that, and it just always rubbed me the wrong way. So I never, in 8 years, I never bothered myself with trying to get a state senate license plate or a state rep license plate, because I felt like it would send the wrong message to the people, like, I'm here to get, you know, all right, I made it through the election, now I can get out of all my speeding tickets. And I've heard members bragging about having, you know, oh man, I got pulled over 7 times last week. Yep, didn't get a single ticket. Like, I've heard people say that. And now sometimes people get these license plates because it's important also, you know, for people to know, okay, this vehicle's allowed in the parking garage. I get that. But there are other members of the General Assembly that are straight up clearly politicians, because once they get elected, it's about me, 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 me. I got to have this license plate. Now it's like a get-out-of-jail-free card. I can speed wherever I want to speed.
Important laws I got to vote on. That's why I'm doing 120, sir.
Yeah. That's a whole nother story for a whole nother day.
I can't wait.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that next week, and I'll tell you why it is. I'll tell you why it is. Members of the General Assembly, if you ever do get a ticket, you're not supposed to have a court date set during the legislative session.
Oh, okay.
And
wow.
And it has to do with members of the Democrat Party trying to make members feel like they have to speed to get to Jefferson City. So it's a good story. It's a good story. We'll talk about it. We're going to come back after a break here in just a minute, and we're going to play the B or not the B.
Everyone's favorite.
If you want to play the B or not the B, and some people don't because it's so hard, but the number is 314-912-1019, 314-912-1019 for our game, the B or not the B. This is Paul Kirtman, News Talk STL. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Follow Paul on social media at Paul Kirtman. This is the Paul Kirtman Show on News Talk STL.
All right, and welcome back to News Talk STL. We're going to play a game to wrap this up. And Joey, you're going to be the only contestant on the B or not the B.
It's time for the B or not the B.
My favorite game to play. I don't want to share it with anybody, so it's an honor.
All right. Well, good. And you know what? You're going to win.
Ah, thank you. No matter what, I like them odds.
Yeah. These are really good odds. So if anybody's out there is casting bets, I'm telling you right now how to make millions.
Joey V or not the Joey V? I think we know who's going to win.
All right. So the way we play this, I'm going to read some headlines. You have to determine if it's from the Babylon Bee, which is a satire website, or if it's a real headline from some other website, which is not the Babylon Bee. All right. Headline is, Pentagon mandates monkeypox vaccine, but only for the Navy.
Oh, my goodness. Now, is there some sort of animosity between the Navy men and the Marine men? I mean, they're
yes.
kind of... Okay, okay. I think you would pick this to be means.
I would.
All right. That's going to be the Babylon Bee.
Good job. That is the Babylon Bee. No offense to all my Navy brothers and sisters out there, but that's a funny joke.
That is funny.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
That is quite a fan base. I saw those people gathering outside the windows, and I was like, I wonder if they're here for the bee. And
they are.
I guess they are. All right. Headline is, Americans stranded in Afghanistan for full year are beginning to think maybe Biden is not coming back for them.
They're just looking up to the skies, waiting for that plane to come back. Oh, my goodness. I would say that is not the bee. It's kind of sad, but it sounds like it could be real.
You know, that's what makes the bee so special. That is actually the Babylon Bee. However, that could be a true headline tomorrow.
Yeah, I was seeing some footage of the one-year anniversary and just, you know, people clinging onto the sides of those planes and 800 people stuck into the back of a plane. It was nuts.
And there's still people over there. There's Americans still over there. They're wanting to get out. All right. Headline is LGB drops the T, keeps trending on Twitter as gay activists turn on transgender activist.
That's not the B. There's no way.
That is not the Babylon Bee. That's a real headline.
That's a perfect score for Joey V.
Well, you did. Yeah, that's right. Good job.
Good job,
Joey. All right, everybody. This is Paul Kerbman. It's the Paul Kerbman Show on News Talk STL. We'll see you next week. 101.9, 94.1.